Welcome to the Organizational Transformation Kung Fu Podcast with your hosts, Sandy Varecchia and Jennifer Long.
So welcome to this episode of Organizational Transformation Kung Fu, or OT Kung Fu as we like to call it. I'm here, of course, with Executive Coach Jen Long in Denver, Colorado at Management Possible. And I'm Sandy Varecchia, an Executive Coach coming to you from Toronto, Canada at Satori Consulting. If this is your first time listening in, we've dubbed our podcast OT Kung Fu because the art of Kung Fu requires patience and energy and time to complete. Much like organizational change or transformation, it takes time to master a skill and it takes the patience and change framework to get us there. Obviously, as executives or executive coaches, this is part of your playing field. Today, I want to start our podcast with a quote by Master Tan So Ting. Never forget that, at the most, a teacher can give you 15% of the art. The rest you have to get for yourself through practice and hard work. I can show you the path, but I cannot walk it for you. I thought this was a fitting quote to begin our podcast on diversity and inclusion in the workplace. Diversity and inclusion is a strategy, not a program. Therefore, podcasts and information sharing like ours today can only give you 15% of what you need to change. It's up to each of you to reflect internally on your conscious and unconscious biases when it comes to diversity and to put in the hard work to forge your own path.
Hello, Sandy.
Hey, Jen.
So maybe we can start at the beginning, because this is a heavy topic, and really kind of talk about what is diversity and inclusion to begin with, because they are two separate things, right? And I made the joke earlier when we were getting ready that it's like coaching and feedback, right? It's not the same thing. Diversity and inclusion, just because they all end up in the same sentence together, doesn't make them the same thing. So diversity, right, is the understanding, accepting, and respecting of the differences between people, right? So differences such as faith, race, gender, differences in personalities, culture, ages, ideologies, sexual orientations, and physical abilities, age, generation, race, gender, sexual orientation, skill sets, and backgrounds. That's a really long list because that's as it should be, right? That's what we're talking about. Whereas inclusion in a workplace culture, that's about removing barriers. That's about removing discrimination. That's about looking at conscious and unconscious biases. And it's about leaving everyone feeling heard, seen, included, and respected. And we were also talking about Apple's version of inclusion, which we both really, really like. It's a philosophy that goes everybody in and nobody out.
Leaving no one behind.
That's right. That's right. So together, right, diversity and inclusion is a strategic choice made by organizations to be inclusive always and not to tolerate behavior that does not embrace and serve an inclusive culture.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that as we've talked for, 3 minutes now, and there's a lot to unpack in that couple of minutes that we've been talking, right?
Right.
So those definitions, and you're right, they're thrown together as a package deal, as a program that organizations need to run. And that's not what this is about. It's bigger than that. So if you think about D&I as a strategy, and you think about it brings up this really important distinction between what diversity is and inclusion is and what organizations need to do with it. So in fact, HBR wrote an article this month called Getting Serious About Diversity. And in this article, they talk about the fact that leaders around the world are talking about diversity, which is fantastic. We want people to talk about diversity. We need to have those conversations more and more. However, the article talks about how they couch it in the need for developing a business case for hiring more women and more people of color. And so it's not a strategy. It's a program. It's a thing they need to do. And we really need to pull back from that. So
I was just telling Sandy earlier that last week I was in a marketing event and I met with, 40 some odd companies, but there were 100 there at this event. And every single one of them had an effort, quote unquote, around diversity inclusion, which meant they were looking for answers from vendors. What do we do?
That's and I'm going to imagine strategy. That yeah. your vendors all had a program just fit for them, right?
That's because what I'm guessing. Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's not about strategy. It's about a program. It's about yeah. rolling something out and hopefully it sticks, much like some of the other things that organizations do. But anyway, right. topic for another day. But you know, I think the point there is that it goes so way past just gender and color. Right? To really get reap the benefits of having a diverse workplace and culture, you have to think of diversity as a much broader strategy within an organization.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's bigger. It's super important because these are the things that, why, right? So why do you want to do it? What's the impact? What are you trying to achieve by putting effort into diversity inclusion, right? What's the outcome? Mm-hmm. So companies are looking for higher productivity. They are looking for impacts into their hiring practices, right? Because it's got to start with who you're bringing into the organization as much as anything. Looking at how are they breaking down barriers to create room for conversations that are more curiosity driven than as opposed to directive, right? How do we learn from each other? Because that's what the diversity is essentially bringing. Higher quality work, right? And better decision-making, better team experiences and that kind of thing. Because when you've got the diversity, you can leverage that experience when you're especially going through this COVID stuff and people who've gone through had different experiences mm-hmm. and different coping strategies, that kind of stuff can be actually pretty useful.
Right. But your point is really valid in that it opens the door for conversations around here, that whole curiosity part, because we can throw people in a room and say, oh, now we're going to be a very inclusive organization. But unless they open the door to have those conversations, it they won't happen. And we'll just go back to the way we've always done things, which is, you know, same process as always, right? So they have to open the door to have those conversations as to why it's important that the culture changes. I think that it's almost as simple as that.
Right. And I was thinking about the current hiring practices, right? So talk about unconscious and conscious biases in hiring, because to this day, right? So Sandy and I are big fans of the PXT Select, right? Algorithms are unbiased and they're really, really good. Yeah. The problem is people don't want to trust the science. They don't want to take the hiring tools that are out there and use them with as much weight as they could, because it's interesting. The dynamic is we want to hire who we vibe with, who we like with, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right person. And it's generally what we're comfortable with, right? We're hiring around comfort as opposed to, is this going to be a good fit?
Right. And one of the things that I do a lot is I help governance nominating committees find the right fit for their boards. And what I did last year with a board is actually, because it was a fairly small community, I actually whitewashed all the resumes so they wouldn't know who it was, so that their conscious or unconscious bias couldn't get in the way. So the best for the job floated to the top, and then they had to make a decision and they had to step outside of the ring to say, ooh, I know that person because of, you know, their brother-in-law's daughter married my uncle's brother,
yeah,
you know,
right? And he was an ass at the wedding. So no,
he was, and I don't want that person in the boardroom. But you know, it creeps in everything that we do. Like all of us have those biases, whether we choose to acknowledge them or not, or know that they're there.
Right. Yeah, and it's and we all have them, and it's hard to recognize when you're in that place of bias and what that bias is about, because mm-hmm. Because it is your bias, you don't see it, right? It's the blind spot. It's the blind spot. And those are hard to pin down.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking about hiring practices, because I get asked a lot about, we're not purposely hiring all the same people, but that's the only people who apply. And so what do you think about, how do you create a diversity and inclusion strategy in organizations, Jen, without it become a box ticking exercise?
Right. you know, and really looking at your community and going, yeah. Who are we? Why are we attracting the same person all the time? And where are our outreach efforts? And who are we having conversations with? And who do we have relations with? And who do we not have relationships with?
Right.
Right. I think companies have been heading in that direction, but I don't know to what success.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly have to cast a wider net. You have to probably change some of the language up in your job descriptions so they appear to be more inclusive. Your websites probably need to reflect who you want to be or who you are in terms of diversity, right?
Right.
All those pieces, when people are looking at organizations, they look at that sort of thing to say, well, do I look like I'm going to fit into the organization? So really look at your brand. It's an important piece of who you're attracting and why you're maybe not attracting a wider cast of people to choose from.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The box ticking is, it'll be interesting. And I'm only kind of thinking about as the pandemic and the job recovery comes into play, you know, right now it feels like we're doing a lot of purging, right? Airlines are laying off. A lot of people are losing work, but I feel like that opens an opportunity, right? As we head into recovery to really examine, right? Huge opportunity to reconfigure how this recruiting comes back and what that growth wants to look like. And there are some businesses that are just slamming it right now. And how are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Timeliness.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of that, but I'm not a big proponent of hiring somebody just because they fit a box.
Right.
Right. And I think a lot of organizations are thinking that if we put one woman on our executive, then our balance is, you know, that much closer to being what people want to see a person of color or whatever it might be.
Yeah. It's almost like you forget when you like an HR goes away and they put their job profiles together. They're not looking at it. Are they connecting the dot to the organizational strategy of what's important? Right. And having that conversation with those individuals at the same time, because I do feel like it's a better fit if they value the same things first and foremost, because you can train people up into some skill sets.
Mm-hmm. And we know that people that have values that are aligned in organizations are happier and they stay longer and they're more productive and more contributing. So I wonder why sometimes when I hear people thinking and talking about, well, if we just put another woman on that board or we put another woman in an executive position, why they think that's okay. Because it likely isn't aligned with their strategy or their values.
Right. Right. I'm looking at notes and I'm thinking about that, how, because we're sort of tapping into this whole change management thing, right? Mm-hmm. We're sort of tapping into how are people being more, and change management's just on my mind because I'm working on a program right now about coaching change and maybe we should do our next podcast on complex versus complicated. Because to me, this is a complex kind of,
there's so many
strategy,
sides to this,
right? There's so many pieces to it relative to why are we doing it? What is it touching? How many things does it touch? How are we thinking about it? And how are we building it into, because I do feel like it's such a root part of an organization, right? So tying that root in and the why into who we are as a company, who we want to become as a company, for so many companies, right? Who are like, oh, had a little look in the mirror and we all look the same, right?
Right.
So what are we doing? What are we doing with that?
Yeah. But you know, that's a hard one, I think, because it's to take a look in the mirror and to actually acknowledge that is one thing. And that's where it has to start. But to then go deeper as to the why do we all look the same? And what are those hiring practices that we have in place? And what have we instilled as values within our organization and as attributes of working for us that gets people that has created this position, right? So really, and it's not about peeking under the covers, it's like ripping the covers off and really getting down and dirty as to why this is the way it is. And that's uncomfortable.
Yeah. But that discomfort, right? So that discomfort, if you're getting uncomfortable, you're getting close. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what you need to be paying attention for, is if you're feeling a little uneasy and a little discomfort and you're looking at it and you're like, oh, that's when you know you're tapping the right vein, because that's the stuff you've got to really kind of put on the table.
Yeah.
And those experiences that might feel a little adverse or confrontational, that's when you know you're somewhere purposeful.
Yeah.
And from a coaching perspective, right? So the whole, if we're going to change how we do business, and change what our approach and change our why and who we are, that we got to be okay about feeling that. We got to be okay about fomenting that a little bit, mm-hmm. and having a tough conversation with our senior teams or whoever that who we're making decisions with, right?
Right. And to that end, it's like, how does it transcend the organization? So I find, like, I do a lot of strategy work and senior teams, they might be willing to go there, might, right? But I can't imagine this is going to be a poster on the wall that we're talking about, because it's so uncomfortable. So it would be whitewashed a little bit, I think, in terms, but that's why they hire, you know, people like you and I to help facilitate those conversations and get them to go deeper. But
right.
I think it's like, you know, leadership sees one thing. What's happening at the lower ends of the organization? How are other people feeling about being included and, you know, the diversity throughout the organization? I really do think that it's something that you need to involve more in to really, really understand where you are and what those gaps are. Because for some companies, the gaps are, you know, wide and big.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the bigger, the more levels you've got in your organization, the bigger your organization, the less connected the top team is to what's really happening organizationally, right? They're so far away from how decisions get made, how teams are built, who gets on them, why they get on them, right?
Yeah.
Because it's always about results. It's always about performance. It's always about the stuff that makes the business go. And there's not a measure. They're not measured on how diverse was your team.
Right.
They're not measured on how inclusive were you in putting that effort across. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think those kinds of conversations have to happen. And if they're measured like a performance management measure, does that create resentment? Does that create distrust? Because there is a white man backlash happening.
Sure.
In an organization. And every time a female gets promoted, there's a little bit of resentment, because there's an assumption by some, a judgment, right?
Absolutely.
She got it because she was a female. She got it because she was a Black female, right?
Yes.
That happens. That's real.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting. You were just saying how it's always about the bottom line, and most strategies are, right? Organizations, they're there for the stakeholders, there to, you know, make a profit. But the HBR article that I was talking about talks about diversity doesn't just because you add diversity into the mix doesn't mean that you instantly get results, right? There's a lot that goes into it. So their analogy was, you know, it's not just about adding diversity and stir, you know, right. and then, you know, pop it in the oven and whoa, we've got a diverse and inclusive organization. It's a lot more that goes into it in order for that to actually happen.
Well, right. So it gets down to that other piece of, are you really building relationships in your organization, and what end are you willing to go to actually know other people that you work with? Because I mean, this is in every industry, and an obvious one is like when you look at people in the performing arts, right? People in the movie business or whatever, they always have they travel in packs, right? They always hire the same cameraman. They always hire the same, because it's like when you know someone and you can rely on them, you bring them into your team, right? And that's we're tribal. That's how we operate. Yet at the same time, the best collaborations are with the biggest diverse kind of perspective. I mean, in performing arts, again, is a great example because they, by design, have to bring all the different perspectives to make a cohesive result.
Right. That's a really good way of looking at it. I wonder why organizations haven't looked to that stream of employment as a way to reflect on what could be versus what is.
Right. Right. I mean, there's models out there that say, here's what it can look like. And that's really diversity of experience and trade, right? Of how we get to but what is that? How would you apply that in your own organization? How could you parse that out to say what makes this the best result? Whose voices need to be in the room for the decision making? Whose voices need to be in the room for the ideating on, you know, what the strategy wants to be? And so let's talk about the strategy session. Who's in the room?
Well, typically it's not junior people for sure. You know, it's, you know, and if you're going to create a strategy, and I'm all for, I think it should be, and like I've said this a million times, it needs to be a strategy, which is not just a program. It's not the, how are we going to do it? It's the, what are we going to do? But we need to then bring it down to all levels to find out the why behind the way we are. There's just so much to unpack in it that it's, you have to, the more you include, the more educated you are, and the better your tactics around your strategy will be to bring it together.
Right. I really liked, right. So there's four actions that have kind of been identified to help leaders and managers shift to a learning and effectiveness approach, right? And so this learning and effectiveness approach is kind of the echo that came out of the HBR article. It's kind of out of all trust building. It's out of all agile efforts. Is how fast do we learn? How good are we at learning? And when we take learning as the fundamental driver, what can we get from this? What do we do with this information? How do we apply this information, right? What does this mean? How do we make meaning, which is a huge leadership skill? That's a huge piece of diversity, right? Mm-hmm. Is the learning strategy. This is how do we learn? And I think if you're going to get from where you are and looking at yourself in the mirror and not liking it to a place of actual diversity and inclusion, you got to be willing. You got to be willing to learn. You got to be willing to learn at speed, right? In all things that you're doing. So the actions that are kind of this learning effectiveness approach is what? Building trust.
Yes.
Right. That's the first one. What are we doing? What are we doing to build trust? What are we doing to actively work against two things, discrimination and subordination?
Right.
So discrimination feels like policy, feels like opportunity, right? And subordination feels like structure.
Yep.
Right? Are we getting flatter? Are we becoming more team-centered? Are we becoming a little bit more egalitarian and less title-based?
Mm-hmm. I think also, too, it comes into that whole zero tolerance policy in that piece, right? If you're going to do something like this, you can't be halfway.
Right.
Right. And so it comes back to, you know, if people are subordinate toward this particular, if you look at subordination in a different light, if they're insubordinate toward where you're trying to take it, you know, what are you going to do as an organization to right the path, their path, or maybe they're not in the right path. Maybe they need to leave. Mm-hmm. But are you willing to take a zero tolerance policy toward this sort of thing, right? Which is not easy because
it's all good until your top performer turns out to be discriminating.
Oh my gosh. I was giving a talk a couple of years ago on bullying and, you know, hot topic, it still is, but a couple of years ago. And the woman in the front row said, well, what do you do when your bully is your star sales manager? Mm. Your VP of sales is the bully. Mm-hmm. And what do you do? Because organizations, a lot of them will talk one way, but when they're driving results, they'll look another way. Right. And that's a great example of, you know, we're talking about diversity and inclusion. You can't be half in.
Right. Right. Either you value it or you don't. And that is the perfect example of, is that an opportunity for you to stand in your value?
Yes, exactly.
Because by doing nothing, by allowing the bullying, you are subverting your value.
Yeah.
And everyone sees it and they are judging you.
Yeah.
It's an easy answer, but it's not one people like.
No. And I don't know how many, you know, and not to pick on the sales managers out there, because they're not all bullies, but where
they're
that
not, but you got through. a lot of diva stuff. Like they'll mistreat the internal service people. I mean, it's a culture, right? That's been rewarded. And when people get rewarded on closing big deals, the behavior tells you what the organization values.
Right. Yeah. So standing in your values, you can't be half in, half out. You can't be half in, half out on approach to bullying. You can't be half in, half out in your approach to diversity and inclusion. And so you got to get crystal clear on what it is that you're standing for and then stand behind it. And that's not easy stuff. Like this is not.
Yeah.
Like
are you willing to say no? Are you willing to stop doing things? Are you willing to move people into different teams? I mean, or out of the organization because they no longer fit with the value structure. But that is why you have values.
Mm-hmm.
And,
they're not just something on the wall written behind me?
It's interesting. I was also just learning, this is like a whole tangent I'm going to go off on for just a second, but I was learning about this. It's like an ancient mathematical study of values, right? It starts with Socrates. And in the 60s, this other guy, this doctor, I can't even remember his name, another podcast. We'll do another podcast on it. That studies the science of what we value and what values are. And so there's this hierarchy of values. And how people think about things is how they show up in this hierarchy of values. And there's a correlation into nature. And when people act in accordance with nature, and when people act in this hierarchy, the way it's structured, that is when we are at our best. And at the very top of this hierarchy of values, it's kind of this people first approach, right? It's how we get to the food chain, right? When you look at it, when you kind of stand out of it and zoom out and go, well, of course, right? We're tribal. And if we're all protecting each other and working together well with each other, that's how we survive.
Right.
But it seems it really comes into play in terms of when you are working in an organization, if they're a people first organization, right?
Mm.
Everybody in, nobody out.
Right.
It changes how people show up. And it's a pattern in nature. So I'm just adding that in there. It's mathematically based. It lives in nature and it's been studied, and that's another whole conversation.
So it's gotta be true.
But it supports, right?
It actually supports it. But you know, I think the other thing, which is not mathematically based, but this whole notion of things need to come from the top. And so your leaders need to walk the talk, right? So it's not just about talking it. They need to walk the talk. And if you're going to be a people first organization, it has to come loud and clear through your leadership all the way down to that person who just got hired yesterday. And part of the onboarding program needs to be, these are our values. Like even before the onboarding, the hiring, and I think Tony talked about this in our podcast with him, right? About who are we hiring? Are we hiring that reflects our values, or are we hiring people that have a skill? And his whole thing was about, no, we're going to hire in reflection of our values because we can, as you said before, teach them everything else.
Well, exactly. Because if I feel like these are my people, if I feel like I've found people I can vibe with and we're all centered up around the same things, what is my willingness, right? Talk about engagement.
Sure.
What is my willingness to go the extra mile to self-teach the skills I need to get, to spend the extra time to really go, okay, I got to get better at this because I don't want to let my team down. These people are important to me.
Yeah.
That all comes together, right? And if I don't know those people, if they look different than me, they've come from someplace else, their native language might be different, right? If I don't really have a good sense of that, and if I don't put the effort in to at least be curious and meet this person and understand them, that connection is not there.
Right.
Right. And that's the effort. That's the part that you really have to know people. I had a great experience coaching a gal who emigrated from Bosnia, and she talks a million miles an hour, and she's super, and she's got great energy, but you've got to get past her demeanor and her accent to kind of get to know her.
Mm.
But once you've had, you know, there's nothing like a coaching session, right? You get to know people very, very quick, but yes. How many people in a work environment have that, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're not sitting down going, tell me about yourself and what's going on for you. But what I would say is try that. You know, if you're on a team and you feel like you're not connecting to somebody, the first thing you should do is try and connect.
Yeah.
Because that is how you build muscle to open the door for your own willingness to, right? It's this goes back to curiosity, which is what we kind of mentioned at the top. If learning and curiosity is valued as a skill set, because that's how you get to the better decisions. That's how you build faster teams, mm-hmm. right? And what are you doing to, it's not just a pizza party. It's not just a social. For it's sure. 1-to-1-to-1-to-1. Mm-hmm. And if I'm on a team of 15 people, I got to have 15 one-on-ones to know everybody on my team.
When I used to coach the MBA program at the university here, they, you know, you've got these executive MBAs come in, average age is like 35 to 40, A-type personalities. And one of the exercises we did on the second night that they're together, they've never met each other, second night together, as was very much about that, providing space for them to have those curiosity-based conversations. What did I just see about you that within the last day that I can celebrate? And then you tell me more about you and tell me what you see in me. And wow, the 2 hours, an hour and a half spent on these teams of 10 to 12 people to really get deep about who they are and what they like and what they don't like and open up, right? It's that space to be curious. It's that space to want to learn and embrace the diversity of others.
Right. So sort of to kind of give it a wrap, because we could probably go on for a long time. The key things here are it's a strategy. It's not a program, right? It's an experience.
Yes.
And it's as much the responsibility of the team at the top. And I'll say, when you're putting your strategy together, who's in the room?
Yeah.
Whose voice should be at the table as you guys come up with your strategies? Think about that. But it's also anybody and you can lead from anywhere on diversity and inclusion by mm-hmm. virtue of how you show up, how you open up, how you create your own curiosity, and how you try and flatten your own experience, right? And not discriminate against, right? Who are you judging? Why are you judging them that way? What are your own blind spots there? And maybe do your own individual self-reflection. Don't think it, because I think it takes everybody rowing in that direction.
It does.
Not just a strategy from the top, not just a, we're going to talk about it and here's our effort for 2021. It's, if we're going to be more diverse and inclusive, it's everybody's actions every day on mm-hmm. how they build team, engage stakeholders, all of it, right? The best decisions, if we've got tough decisions, whose voices are we missing, and start asking those simple questions.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think you've nailed it. I think in the effort, I like the idea of the personal self-reflection, organizational reflection, and individual self-reflection, because we all play a part in our organizational cultures. And if you're going to change it, as you say, we all need to row in that same motion. And we all play a part, and we're all going to take responsibility for it. And the notion of diversity and inclusion is not going to go away. It may feel like more of a hot topic because of all the things that have happened in the last number of months around Black Lives Matter and things like that, but it's always been there. I just don't think it's been talked enough about enough as it is now. So I'm glad that it is. I'm glad it's out in the open, but it's, I challenge the organizations or the HR people that are listening to us today of, what are you going to do in order to start the conversations at your organization?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And don't think you have to get the whole organization all going and find some low hanging fruit, right? So strategically speaking, where can you have the biggest impact the fastest in mm-hmm. this regard and getting people on board? Because it's one project at a time, one effort at a time, one person at a time.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah. And I think that, wrap it up again, just to not to put a final point on it would be, that shift to learning and effectiveness approach. So built in trust. Actively work against discrimination and subordination, embrace a wide range of styles and voices, and make cultural differences a resource for learning. So there's your platform.
There you go.
Excellent.
All right. Well, that's it for us on diversity and inclusion. And we look forward to the next podcast coming up soon.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jen.
All right, Sandy. It's lovely chatting. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for listening, and please visit Sandy's website at satoriconsultinginc.ca. That's SATORI consultinginc.ca, and Jen's website at managementpossible.com. Thanks again.